The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here on kpcg.fm. You can get the live stream, of course, at thetrumpet.com and at kpcg.fm, both of our websites. And we stream this live from our Edstone campus in the UK, right in the heart of the Midlands, right in the middle of the country. And we come to you every weekday afternoon, evening, or morning, depending upon where you live. Well, we've got lots to get to on today's program. In a moment, we'll discuss more of the on the attacks against the President of the United States and whether or not Donald Trump, President Trump, is being boxed in. You look at some of the headlines, and it just, you would think everything is falling apart, even within his own administration. So we'll look at that here in just a moment. We'll also follow up what we discussed on Friday and Thursday last week, more from this documentary on the farmland in South Africa. We went through that over the weekend. There's a few more sound bites that we'd like to play for you. And of course, we're working on a larger piece as well, just trying to collect as much of this information as we can. I think I'll be writing on some of it later on today in the Monday Trumpet Brief. But this is also something that we'd like to just put into our magazine, the website, down the road as well. So hopefully we can just pull together all this information that we've been discussing in the last few days and come up with more of a feature article in the Trumpet as well. Also, a fair bit to discuss regarding the Pope. He's, I guess he's been in Ireland over the weekend, and if you've been following some of the headlines over the last couple of weeks, there is a growing scandal, an ongoing scandal with respect to the priests, even right at the highest levels, and the cover-up, this pedophile scandal that no one seems to do much about. And there's one case in Pennsylvania, I think it was, and then even just some of the disappointing crowd sizes in Ireland over the weekend. Richard has helped me put together some material for the next segment, where we'll consider whether or not there might be a new pope in the near future. And then also, we've had a lot to say in recent weeks about Germany's break with the United States, this transatlantic break, and you really see it in numerous geopolitical hotspots around the world, and we'll update you on some of that. Richard addressed a fair bit of this last week in his Trumpet Brief, so more on this break between Germany and the United States, and of course, the prophetic significance of that break. Well, last week, I sent an email to a few of the guys around here following the conviction of Paul Manafort, who was on President Trump's campaign for 4 or 5 months in 2016. His conviction regarding some I guess, failure to pay taxes and things of that nature back in 2006, 2007. And then on the same day, I think all this happened on Tuesday last week, Michael Cohen's plea deal. And following that, I think it was the next day, The Economist from here in the UK, its cover story had a big picture of Donald Trump, and then right next to him in big bold letters, it asks, above the law? Is Donald Trump above the law? I mean, just think about that for a moment. When you consider what's been happening over the last 2 years, and how that this president is being attacked from every angle, racism, obstruction of justice, collusion with the Russians, and then these investigations, and before the investigation, the spying, the informants, The FISA court orders, and of course the special investigation, Robert Mueller's investigation, and then all of these convictions, all of these people that they're going after, like Manafort, like Cohen, and then more recently, the people that are being flipped from Donald Trump's inner circle, or close to it, they're being given immunity so that they can come forward and well, hopefully, at least in the minds of these investigators, provide some dirt on the president. And yet, amid all of this, The Economist, it's not unlike so many other major publications. They're trying to paint the picture that Donald Trump is somehow above the law and he's being attacked by all of these agencies, these investigators, right and left and boxed in. And he can't fire people. The one person he did fire was someone that Rod Rosenstein wanted him to fire. And yet now we know that was all a setup. That was Comey's way of getting this special investigation going. So what is he able to do now? And he's got someone at the head of the DOJ he's recused himself and that won't do much. And so it's just the president being pounded from every direction. Mark Levin, the reason I want to play these clips here is because the language really does mirror some of the things that my father brought out in that Saving America from the Radical Left, the May edition of the Trumpet magazine. But this is Mark Levin discussing, I think it was on a Fox News program Saturday, where he's talking about this U.S. attorney in New York and the Cohen plea deal and just all of this nefarious activity that's going on in these courtrooms, in these investigations. This is Mark Levin from Saturday, clip 10.
I really want to focus on what this U.S. attorney doing and how evil it is. So Cohen pleas, right?
Yeah.
So he never, he doesn't have to, there's no trial. Then he gets the head of the National Enquirer, immunity, no trial. Then he gets this guy, Weaselberg, or whatever his name is, he gets immunity from Trump world, right?
Yeah.
To basically say, yeah, Trump made these payments, perfectly legal payments, private payments, not reportable, not campaign payments. So what's he doing, this prosecutor? If it is the position of the United States Justice Department, which has now been admitted by Mr. Mueller, that you cannot indict a sitting president, what are they doing? I'll tell you what they're doing, and this is the important point. Now that they know they cannot indict a sitting president, which I've been saying for a year and a half based on the Department of Justice memos, what are they doing? They are piling up, piling up, piling up through their criminal investigations, misusing prosecutorial tools and taxpayer dollars, items for impeachment, campaign violations, the use of funds, corporate funds, violating limits. And the president of the United States now is the only citizen in the United States of America who cannot defend himself because he cannot be indicted. Now, the left will say, well, then indict him. He has to defend the office of the presidency. More than that, let me tell you another little secret, Jesse, that the professors and the rest of them will want to remind them in their next show,
okay,
which is this. Under impeachment, you cannot impeach a president for events that occurred before he was president.
Right.
That's Mark Levin over the weekend talking about this president, that, and this is the truth of it. He can't really defend himself. Now, there's certain protections that he has just because he's president. Like he pointed out, he can't be indicted. And then on the point of impeachment, whether or not a majority of Democrats, if that's what they get this November, would even pay any attention to that. But you can't be impeached for something that happened before you came into office. But leaving that aside, here is all, I mean, who is really above the law here? Here you have the Mueller team, all of these left-wing Democrats going after the president of the United States. They've got an unlimited budget. And there, as you just heard there, they're piling up all of this information that they hope will be used against the president so that he can be impeached, assuming the Democrats get a majority. It's all politically motivated. Russian collusion, that's long gone. Now it's the obstruction. Now it's the illegal payment, the way that it was framed last week. That's what this prosecutor came out and said. We'll come to that again in just a moment. But listen again to what Mr. Levin said on Saturday. Here's clip 11.
So this is all very diabolical, very evil. Impeachment's being pushed by the media, as shown by that montage that you want. But the fact of the matter is, the president has done nothing wrong. He hasn't made illegal payments. He hasn't violated campaign laws. He hasn't obstructed justice. He didn't collude with the Russians. This is all a horrible, horrible spectacle.
It is a spectacle. It's a big hoax, as my father said in that article. And the more and more you get into it, if you're really looking at it with your eyes open, the more you see just how corrupt so many of these government agencies are. You see the deep state. You see what it's up to. You see the corruption on a deep level. It's amazing when you consider. I mean, we're getting a hard look at what the radical left is willing to do to maintain its hold on power or to get it back. Total and utter disregard for the law of the land. All of those years under the Obama presidency, Hillary Clinton with the emails, the private server, the obstruction of justice there. I mean, you can't even think of one individual. Campaign finance with the Obama administration or the incoming administration. What happened in 2008? 2.5 million, I think it was. But you can't even think of one individual. Who was indicted? Who was prosecuted? Where were the plea deals back then, led by an investigation that was going after the lawyer for Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama? You just did not see it. Now it's all over the place, and it won't go away. And yet you still have publications like The Economist coming forward and saying, it's Donald Trump, of all people, who's above the law. You just can't get to Donald Trump. Well, it's like Mark Levin just said there. How are any of these other cases even related to him? It's remarkable, really, when you think of his presidency, not even 2 years old. And as he's trying to say, as he's trying to trumpet, and just a few people help him do this, the economy's booming, this is better, jobs are coming back, unemployment's lower in the minority communities, and on it goes. Who is really above the law? One final clip here from that same program, clip 12.
The abuse of power by Mr. Mueller, the abuse of power in the Southern District of New York. What is taking place here is unprecedented.
It's unprecedented. We've not seen a system of justice with this kind of a double standard in the history of the United States. You've just not seen it. It's totally one-sided. And the blind and duped and left-wing media is still convinced that it's Donald Trump and all of his people that are somehow above the law. And here they're being thrown into prison. They're being put in solitary confinement. Or they're being told, we're going to put you in jail for a long time unless you flip on this president. Where's the real abuse of power? Who is above the law? I mean, who's governing the Mueller team? They have free reign. I mean, this investigation is so far outside the original scope of that special investigation. It's laughable. Mueller's one-sided probe cannot be justified, says Kimberly Strassel. That was in her column on Friday. It can't be justified. She mentions at the start of her piece, Robert Kuzami. That's the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney. We played the clip, I think, last Wednesday. And he came out, remember, with his lecture on how that this plea deal with Michael Cohen, it just reminds us that we're a nation of laws, he said. And those laws, those rules, they apply equally to everyone. Well, that was a nice try. Noble words, Kimberly Strassel says. Words that used to mean something. She says, but a disparity of justice is at the heart of our current crisis of faith in institutions. She says, Americans aren't outraged that the Federal Bureau of Investigation felt obliged to investigate allegations leveled at campaigns, or that a special counsel is looking at Russian electoral interference. They are instead furious that Lady Justice seems to have it in for only one side. They're only going after one side, and then the media, the major media, they're all there to helpfully provide cover for this unjust, unfair system of justice. They're going after one side, and the major media says that side that they're going after is above the law. Can you believe this? It's upside down. It's a one-sided probe that cannot be justified. It's ripping America apart at the seams. Kimberly Strassel says, the country has watched the FBI treat one presidential campaign with kid gloves, the other with informants, warrants, and eavesdropping. They've seen the Justice Department resist all efforts at accountability, even as it fails to hold its own accountable. And she says, and don't get them started on the one-sided media. It's all one-sided. Whether it's the media, whether it's the Justice Department, who's policing the Justice Department? Look at how long it took just for Peter Strzok to get fired before he could then go on and make his millions. Here, the President of the United States, as my father brings out in that May article, I mean, it's something to behold. There's not a lot he can do because they're boxing him in, but where he can, he fights back. He fights back with what he says in interviews, like he did on Fox Thursday morning. I mean, this people flipping right and left. This ought to be unlawful, he said, for a prosecutor to go in there and to get someone to turn on someone else only because they're not going to go to prison for as long as they would otherwise. He's going up against all of these investigations. He's going up against 100% of the Democratic Party. He's going against 90% of the media. He's going against all of these deep state bureaucrats, the political establishment in Washington, and even a good chunk of the Republican Party. A lot of the Republican leadership, the never Trump Republicans. And in watching him at least try to fight back with what he can, Twitter, interviews. It is, as my father has said, something to behold. James Dellingpole, he had a piece over the weekend about how even conservative thinkers in Britain and the U.S., they won't, even when there's a lot of conservative policies being carried out, they won't stand up for this president. They won't provide him with support. Dellingpole says, the conservative thinkers in Britain and the U.S. that I admire most are the ones who can complete a sentence on the achievements of Trump's presidency without ending it, but personally, I find him deplorable. I admire these mavericks because they're so brave, clear-headed, and rare. There's only a few that will look at the presidency, at the actual actions, and say, well, hang on a second, moving the embassy, reducing taxes, booming economy, there's some good things happening here. I mean, these are things we've been talking about as conservatives for some time. Only a very few, because they just get on board with The Economist and with the Sunday morning talk shows. Look at how they used the death of John McCain, the longtime senator. He dies over the weekend, and of course it's all over the news, and all of these talking heads saying, well, the reason we revere John McCain is because of the person that currently occupies the president, or the White House, I mean. John McCain, I mean, he was one of those Republicans who was pretty liberal in a lot of ways. So we like him. He was very civil, unlike the current president. It's another story used as an excuse to attack the sitting president of the United States. It's nonstop. And it shifts from week to week. Whether it's racism one week, hating women the next, putting minorities in cages, and on it goes. It's nonstop, and you've heard the montages. We played a few of them on this program. Last week it was impeach, 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 something like 222 times on these cable networks. In one day, they are so hopeful, so obsessed with bringing down this president, they can't see straight. And then here he's being attacked from every angle, and people around him are going to jail. And the economist that prides itself in being above the fray, the economist says he's above the law. Dellingpole says, in the UK, I cannot think of one newspaper or publication, not one, even among those supposedly on the right, which has given a fair and balanced assessment of Donald Trump, let alone a favorable one. Not even on the right. Not even coming from the political right. I cannot even think of one. And then Dellingpole, he says in the same piece, of course, they're going to look at me. I'm writing this for Breitbart. Oh, Breitbart. Oh, that's a loony publication. You can't get any truth from Breitbart. So he's not going to go to the Washington parties. He's not going to be invited to the Sunday morning talk shows because he's not like John McCain. He's not like the more liberal Republicans. But he's looking at the agenda of the Trump administration, which in spite of the fact that it's being attacked from every angle, well, it's managed to get quite a bit done in a year and a half. He says here, so if you happen to think, as I do, that Trump is shaping up to be one of the truly great presidents, I mean, I'm not so sure about that, but he sees something getting done. He sees conservative judges being appointed. He sees taxes being lowered. He says, no commissioning editor is going to welcome your contribution. He says further on, American conservative commentators I know have similar problems. If you want to be taken seriously as one of the right-wing intellectual elite, you basically need to advertise yourself as a never-Trumper. So they advertise themselves as that, and then they get invited on the shows. And it's like he goes on to say, really, what they want, more than a conservative agenda being carried out, what so many of these commentators from the right want is to be liked. They want to be liked. On both sides of the aisle, they want to be respected in the media. They want to be invited on the shows. See, it's more about their vanity than it is about an actual conservative agenda. That's what he's bringing out here. Dellingpole says, you've got a guy in the White House rapidly working his way through every conservative's wish list of all the good, important things that need to be done, and somehow you've got to ignore all that and delude yourself and your readers that Hillary would have been a vastly preferable conservative-friendly option. Well, he says there's a few exceptions, Victor Davis Hanson being one of them. He points to a recent piece by Hanson, we went through it ourselves a while back, where he just went right down the list, mostly with foreign policy. Well, what about what's happening here? What about what's happening in this part of the world? What about what happened with ISIS? What about pulling out of the Iran nuke deal? This is a lot of action in 18 months. Action that, I guess with another president, maybe the conservatives would be happy, but then you begin to wonder, Are you really serious about conservative principles being upheld? Or do you just want to be liked by the Washington political establishment? Dellingpole says, every time I hear a conservative deploring Donald Trump or saying, but Charlottesville, I hear not the voice of moderation, but an intellectual and moral coward happy to sell his own comrades to an implacable enemy for the reward of being placed slightly lower down on the enemy's death list. They're like just a little bit more. But in the end, the radical left, they hate them all. They hate them all. And the only time they'll sing their praises is when they can use it, like they have with the death of John McCain. When they can use it as a means to attack Donald Trump. Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not, my father wrote. It's quite something to behold, him resisting these anti-American forces. It is something to behold, to see him, and him alone, resisting against these anti-American forces. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Is it possible that we could see a new pope in the Vatican in the near future? Well, the latest child abuse scandal or allegations, they go right to the very top. The Catholic Church is again facing a monumental crisis. This grand jury report, I think it was in Pennsylvania, published just a couple of weeks ago, 300 Catholic priests abusing children over a period of 70 years. 300! Richard was saying this morning that the report is just, it's just the latest in a long line of these kinds of revelations. And then, of course, they always expose the fact that the Catholic Church hierarchy helps to cover up the abuse. The pattern was abuse, deny, and cover up, said Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro. Abuse, deny, and cover up. He said there was a systematic cover up by senior church officials. Now, you may have seen some of the headlines yesterday regarding this former Vatican ambassador to the U.S., Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. He said he told Pope Francis about this abuse, this sex scandal, and that the Pope didn't do anything. And now Vigano's calling on the Pope to resign. He said yesterday, I think it was yesterday, in this extremely dramatic moment for the universal church, he must acknowledge his mistakes. Speaking of the Pope, in keeping with the proclaimed principles of zero tolerance, Pope Francis must be the first to set a good example to cardinals and bishops who covered up these abuses. And so he should resign along with these other priests. The buck stops there, right at the top. Veteran Vatican, Rocco Palmo, I guess is his name, regarding this memo from Vigano, he said it can only be described as nuclear, to say nothing of fresh fuel for the burgeoning crisis. So it's a monumental crisis. And now you've got top officials calling on the Pope himself to step down. Well, this comes amid all the coverage of the Pope's trip to Ireland over the weekend. And the Catholic Church, they were expecting a massive turnout to this visit. But these investigations in the U.S., and there's more to come. I saw an article this morning where they're going to be investigating complaints in Missouri. So it's not going to stop at Pennsylvania. And of course, when he visits Ireland, the Pope, it brings to mind an investigation from years ago that revealed all kinds of abuse in Ireland as well, where the state was paying the Catholic Church basically to run a series of schools, orphanages, educational institutions, and the church took care of. This was the Catholic Church brought in to take care of children of single or divorced mothers. And then the state supported it financially until this 9-year investigation found out about all of this sexual abuse that was endemic in boys' institutions. Pedophilia, rape. And that really did put a strain on Ireland's relationship with the Catholic Church. This was, I think, back in 2009 when Ireland recalled its ambassador to the Vatican. I mean, Ireland, the Republic, it's traditionally been staunchly Catholic. 15,000 people in Ireland have applied for compensation through this government scheme for those that were abused by the Catholic Church. So now with this investigation in Pennsylvania, I mean, that's brought it all right back into the news as well, together with Pope Francis's visit to Ireland over the weekend. He was in Dublin, and the crowds were a lot smaller than they expected. They gave out tickets, I think, in advance for the Mass that was held yesterday, and a lot of people just didn't show up. So pressure is building on the Vatican, pressure for changes, in some cases pressure for the current Pope to step down. Well, as we know, the Bible has a lot to say about not just a strong man to come out of the heart of Europe, but a strong man to head up the Vatican in these last days, someone who will confront that church's enemies. And it's hard to say. I mean, whether or not Pope Francis can be the one, it would seem there would be someone that would just be a lot stronger in the face of all of this abuse, this scandal, and also a lot stronger in bringing the 10 kings together. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about the good graces of the Vatican, bringing together that seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Well, just to follow up on what you've been hearing and reading at thetrumpet.com in recent weeks, this growing divide between Germany and the United States of America, Richard, as I said, going back to last Tuesday's trumpet brief, he talked about the division between these two over Turkey and how that Turkey and the United States really had this this very public spat between the two nations. Turkey not releasing that American pastor, Andrew Brunson. And then the United States really tightening the screws on Turkey economically. And rather than back up the United States, rather than apply pressure on this Middle Eastern dictator, Erdogan, Germany swooped in and offered aid and support to Turkey. Germany's a big economic partner for Turkey and indicated just last week or the week before that it might even send aid to Turkey. Notice what Spiegel had to say on Friday. It says officials in Berlin, political circles, have often complained about Turkey's president. So this is not that long ago where German officials were looking at Turkey and Turkey's president and saying, you know, this is not right what he's doing. There was the spring of 2017 when he accused the German government of adopting Nazi methods. That was just a little over a year ago. Erdogan accusing Germany of Nazi tactics. Spiegel says, though, last week, now, listen to this, now members of the German government are describing another president's behavior as outrageous and primitive. Not Recep Erdogan, but Donald Trump, who picked a quarrel with Turkey and imposed duties and sanctions on the country, sending the Turkish lira into a tailspin. So now, you see, as we've been saying, now Trump is the problem. Trump is the target. President Trump's the one we have to remove. We have to get rid of. We have to resist. We have to undermine. And so President Trump cracks down on Turkey, and Germany rushes to Turkey's defense. They see it as just another opportunity to resist against the United States. I mean, how sharp is this divide? Not between just Turkey and America, but Germany and America. And where is this leading? Well, you know where this is leading, that transatlantic split. It's prophesied. Britain exiting the EU. It's prophesied. And the EU downsizing to 10 kings. That's coming too. It's prophesied. And then, of course, the Daniel 8 man to head up that resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Well, you see a similar story with Iran. The United States tightening the screws on Iran and reimposing sanctions, and also saying to other international businesses, corporations and such, if you keep doing business with Iran, then we'll penalize you as well. And then here comes a headline today saying that Europe is about to pay Iran, I think it was $20 million, something like that. Europe, led by Germany, trying to help out Iran, even as the United States reimposes sanctions. This is from This Week in Germany. It says Germany's foreign minister declared independence from the United States this week. Europe, he said, should form a counterweight to the U.S., opposing America whenever it crosses red lines. That's the strategy now. That's the approach in the German foreign policy. We should be forming a counterweight to the United States. It says here, writing in Germany's Handelsblatt newspaper, he warned that Germany couldn't be this counterweight alone. The main goal of our foreign policy is therefore to build a sovereign, strong Europe. He called for European independence. In practical ways, he wants to make Europe's financial system much less dependent on the United States. And then it says later on, after referring to this 70-year alliance that Germany's had with the United States, this commentator says here, we're witnessing a fundamental shift in Germany's alliance. Well, you can look at some of the recent articles that we've had. Europe and America losing that loving feeling, and of course my father's recent article and Key of David program, I think that goes by the same name, Germany and Russia's secret war against the United States. I mean, this is a significant trend to keep our eyes on. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with just a brief update on the situation in South Africa, the decision made last week by the South African president and its parliament, South Africa's parliament, to now make it legal for the government there to seize private property from white farmers without providing any kind of compensation in return. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Last week we told you about the new law in, well, the change in the Constitution in South Africa that allows for the government to just help itself to the land of these white farmers in South Africa. President Ramaphosa, he said, South Africans, through their publicly elected representatives in Parliament, voted overwhelmingly in support of a motion to accelerate land redistribution, that's what they're calling it, through expropriation of land without compensation. Why, it's just a friendly little policy to redistribute the land, to take the land from the whites and to give it to the blacks. Well, as I said last week, there was a report on Fox News about this racist policy, and that then led to a tweet by Donald Trump where he said that he had asked his Secretary of State to closely monitor what's happening in South Africa with these farm seizures. And then he went on to say that there was a large-scale killing of farmers going on in South Africa. And, of course, the major media then erupted in protest. Trump's South Africa tweet seems to embrace racist narrative on land dispute, said the New York Times. President Trump's false claim about murders on South African farms. It's not happening. They're not being murdered. There's no violence. Another headline, Trump misleads again with claim of South African farm murders. He's misleading. He's lying. He does it every day. I mean, he's just under attack from every direction. Another headline said, President Trump's pushing white nationalist ideas into the mainstream. So he comes out and talks about what's happening on the ground. And all of his enemies in the major media, they in unison, they say it's not happening. There is no violence. There is no murder. Well, you get 30 or 40 paragraphs into the New York Times piece, and you come to find out there actually is a lot of murder. The number of killings of farmers, including farm workers in South Africa, it's at a 20-year low. But read on. Read on. It says 47 in the fiscal year 2017-18, according to a research published in July by AgraSA, a farmers organization there. So for the New York Times, this is spectacular news. Only 47 farmers have been murdered over the past year. Well, that's even, I think, up for debate, because it's hard to get accurate figures from the government in South Africa. I played for you last week this clip where, again, in response to President Trump's tweet, this is what the left-wing commentator Al Sharpton had to say on, I believe it was MSNBC, clip number one.
He goes to race, and what better way than to give this neo-Nazi propaganda that white farmers are being killed in South Africa, when in fact that is not true, not based on them being white.
So he just says it's not happening, it's not true. There's no racism. There's no racism in the other direction from black to white. All the racism, the commentators would have us believe, is in the other direction. All the problems date back to apartheid. But just listen, I won't play them for you again, but just listen to some of the prominent leaders of South Africa calling for an attack on whiteness, calling for the seizure of these farms, these properties, saying that we're not calling for whites to be killed just yet. I mean, that could happen. You heard the soundbites last week. Listen to what they're saying, and then look at what's happening. I mentioned on the program Friday this documentary, Farmland, with this young reporter who's there on the scene interviewing. It's an eye-opening documentary. And, of course, the Al Sharpton types, just like they did when President Trump tweeted what he tweeted, they're going to come out and attack the gal behind this documentary, no doubt. But here she is on the ground in South Africa, and she's getting their story. These people who are being persecuted. This is another snippet from that documentary, Farmland, clip two.
Now it's daily. It's definitely daily. It's increased unbelievably.
Between 2012 and 2016, the attacks on small holding farms or properties deemed as a farm or an area non-residential has increased by an average of 72.9%. The figures that I've just given you is, according to our statistics, government statistics will differ.
The government's statistics would be different, he said there at the end. But these two, I forgot to write down the name of the organization, but these two that you just heard there, their job is to go into these farms after there's been an attack and in some cases a murder and to clean up the crime scene. And so the first lady there who says that it's definitely increased, unbelievably so. She was saying how that they used to get calls every week or two. Now it's daily. Now it's daily, she says. And then her colleague, between 2012 and 2016, the attacks on small holding farms or properties, they've increased by an average of 72%. So you can't even really get the truth from the authorities in South Africa, for obvious reasons. And then you have all the commentators on our part of the world or in our part of the world saying, it's not even happening. It's not even happening. What are you talking about? Why are you carrying on with this white nationalist agenda? And so the truth is cast to the ground, which is why it's important to give you this. Hear it for yourself. There, Sam showed me Friday this Associated Press report, and the Associated Press, it's not a right-wing organization. So you can pick apart the creator of this Farmland documentary if you like. What about the Associated Press report, where they're talking about the news from South Africa last week? Oh, now they're going to be seizing land without compensation. And then embedded within this AP report, here again, you have these testimonials from farmers who are trying to get their message out. This is what's actually happening. Here's an example. This is clip number 6.
It's fact. You know, we've lost 4 of our neighbors in the last 10, 12 years due to farm murders. My direct neighbor was murdered 4 or 5 years ago. And it's people very close to you eventually that gets affected. So it's a great concern to us. And I think it's something that government should look into and try and stop as soon as possible.
That's from the Associated Press. One individual, one farmer there, who says that in the last 10 years, he's lost 4 of his neighbors. 4 of his neighbors. One, his next door neighbor, murdered 4 or 5 years ago. And he says there, very calmly, in fact, I think the government should look into this and try to stop it. Well, you would think they would. Here's another example from the same, this is not the documentary, this is the Associated Press, clip 7.
White individual farmers only own 22% of the country as a whole. The government owns a third. There's traditional communities that owns large parts of the rest. So the figures are being portrayed falsely as if white people own all the land, which, as I've said, is only 22%. And that is being abused to try and mobilize people to building up hatred towards the white community. And those things we need to oppose to say what the real facts are.
That's from the Associated Press report. You keep hearing these figures, something like South Africa has 8% white people, but they own something like 70 or 80% of the land. Well, as he says, it's 22% with the government owning about a third, and then the rest, you know, divvied up among the populace. But there's, again, someone on the ground saying the government, they're not even presenting the statistics right. Because they're trying to stir up hatred against the white farmers. They're trying to get the blacks to mobilize against the whites. I mean, this is frightening, the direction that this is heading in. It's heading toward race wars, and that's even brought out in the documentary. Here's one more from that Associated Press report, clip 8.
We have a huge crisis in South Africa with regards to the murdering of farmers. The figure has fluctuated over the past years. Over the past 20 years, it initially went down, but over the last 4 years, we've seen a rapid increase in farm murders. The problem with these murders, of course, any murder is a problem, but if you compare it to the average murder rate in South Africa, our estimate is that your chances of being murdered if you're a farmer is 3 to 4 times higher than that of an ordinary South African.
3 or 4 times higher, your chances of being murdered in South Africa. Now, the New York Times is quite happy that it's only 47 and that you could go back to the late 1990s and it was something like 150, 200. So, hey, we're going in the right direction. But here on this farmland documentary and in this Associated Press report, you have 2 different sources that say while it's fluctuated over the past 25 years, in the last 4 or 5 years, it's increased significantly. The farmland documentary says it's every day they're getting calls. 72.9% increase. This fellow you just heard on the Associated Press report. Over the past 4 years, we've seen a rapid increase in farm murders. Let me switch over to the farmland documentary. This is clip number 3.
Over the past few years, the South African government has used its Black Economic Empowerment Policy to coerce utility companies into depleting the number of white workers to reflect the racial makeup of the country. In reality, this means that companies with government contracts must shoot for a goal of a workforce with no more than 8% white workers. Since these mass layoffs, filling engineering and other high-skilled positions has been difficult, only worsening the water crisis and causing serious ramifications for the country's white farming minority.
This documentary has a fair bit in there about the government policies that are intended to hurt the white farmers. They want to drive them out. And of course, as I said last week, with respect to Zimbabwe, this is not just hurting white farmers. It's going to hurt the blacks as well. It's going to hurt all of South Africa. Well, I don't have time to get into the rest, but that Associated Press report quoted someone saying, look, we want to get the message out, and we feel like President Trump's tweet was at least a start. So there they are, looking at that tweet by the President of the United States saying, thank you, finally, please tell the world what's happening. And then everyone else in the West, as soon as they see the tweet, ganging up on Donald Trump, saying Mr. Trump's a liar, saying he's a white nationalist, saying he's a racist, attacking him from every direction. And the truth, meanwhile, is cast to the ground. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.